This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast. Radiothon is now on and we need your support. This is our one time a year that we ask you to support Joy so we can continue being a voice for the LGBTI community of Melbourne and beyond. By becoming a member, renewing your membership, or donating to Joy, you will keep out loud and proud LGBTI voices on air and on podcast. And around 50 volunteers work hard around the clock to make them available. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Then we hope you head to joy.org.au to find out how you can support us this radiothon. We still need Joy. Your voice. Your radio station.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass. On Joy 94.9.
That's right. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. Thanks to the guys from Urban Dreaming for another fantastic show. That was Getting By from the TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And we're here tonight with our special guest, Rog. Thanks for joining us, Rog.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
So we're here to talk about something a bit different this week. I am back from my trip and the boys did a fantastic job of keeping the show going.
Yes, and welcome back, Ruby. Well, we did miss you.
Thank you, Anthony. I missed you too. I missed Katie Underwood, of all the things, which is a bit devastating. But that's okay. I'm sure she was fantastic, and I listened to it on the podcast. If you want to listen to our podcast, you can find it available on iTunes or check it out at joy.org.au/triple bypass. If you guys want to get involved in the conversation tonight, you can message us on 0427 569 949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au. You can follow us on Twitter at triple bypass. And you can find us on Facebook at Triple Bypass on Joy. We are everywhere. The buys are very much settled throughout the social medias.
We are. So do get involved. We have a very interesting show tonight.
We do. We are talking about the very, very queer history of house and club music, as well as what has been happening nowadays to try and bring that history back and to get a better sense of the origins, and also to kind of talk about the importance of promoting the people who created this stuff, that once it becomes mainstream, the creators tend to kind of get removed or whitened or whitewashed.
They get taken over.
They do. Now, you know, when I was thinking of techno and house, I thought of Skrillex. I don't really think of queer clubs, but this apparently is wrong. Rog, over to you. You are definitely the expert in the studio at this point.
definitely wrong. And I guess there's a trend you see in kind of any art or creative form that as it gains prominence and slowly kind of breaks down the walls to being accepted by mainstream society, then mainstream society co-opts this. And that mainstream society in this kind of context, meaning white, cisgender, straight, middle class, upper class, and then kind of becomes further corporatized. And what was originally created as, you know, a means for marginalized and minoritized people to organize together, to find safety, to be able to find community, to be able to find safe places to express themselves and just exist, ends up being just turned into a capitalist tool to make money taken out of the hands of these communities that created it, and then not even is accessible to them because the financial barriers come into play.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I just want to, is that a bad thing? I mean, I'm not saying I'm for capitalism and all that sort of stuff, but you're talking about music that is accessible to the people who belong to that community, who know how to find it and how to have fun with it, but then it becomes more accessible to for other people to enjoy?
Or was it more accessible for other people or more accessible for one group of people at the cost of the originators or the creators?
That's the issue, is kind of at the cost of the originator. So Madonna is a fantastic example of this. The Madonna track Vogue, one of the biggest Madonna tracks, Voguing, you know, was a very... Voguing had a very particular social context that was queer communities of color, particularly African-American and Latin communities, Puerto Rican a lot. And once Madonna released that track Vogue, that dance, that term, that aesthetic was solely associated with Madonna. And the harm doesn't just come in it becoming accessible to a wider audience. The harm comes when that original context, which this music was created in, is forgotten, and these peoples who created this, you know, this cultural artifact aren't able to gain any benefit from it anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's like if you made something great, then somebody stole your idea and then they got rich off it. That's what I would say is a simple way to explain the harm of it.
I think, and music, we've seen this with music, particularly with both queer and queer people and people of color. You know, rock and roll started, Blue Suede Shoes, or You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog was a song that was originally done by an African-American woman that became famous when Elvis Presley took it. I think disco originated in queer African-American clubs, and that became a massively white, you know, disco fever, John Travolta kind of a deal. I guess I just hadn't been aware that house music, which was like, when I think of house music, I think of frat boys. You know, I think of polo shirts in pastel colors and chino shorts and blonde hair and those belts with the lobster prints around them. Like, that's what I'm thinking of, like, my dad's an attorney, or, you know, that's what I think of. And to know that this was actually something that came from a queer space makes me really frustrated, because you see, when you look at the people who are known now for producing house music, it's a sea of white, pretty straight faces.
No, absolutely. Well, just a quick history lesson. House basically more or less directly evolved out of disco in Chicago in kind of coming out of the late 70s into the early and mid 80s. And very much, you know, the context in which house music were played in were, again, like queer communities of color, primarily like African-American and Latin Caribbean queers of color. And the context, like, were in sex worker clubs, in trans clubs, in queer clubs around HIV/AIDS activism. It was kind of the soundtrack to these subcultures. And as you said, yeah, it's been completely co-opted. But house music, it was very much the soundtrack to these spaces for these minoritized people to organize. Just to touch back on disco, just another thing that's kind of overlooked in the disco history is not only, like, the whitewashing of it, like John Travolta, Disco Fever, is the whole, like, disco was hated on originally, well, for a multitude of reasons, but a large part of it was homophobia and anti-black racism. The whole disco sucks movement was really emerging when disco was hitting its stride, and disco sucks was basically a bad malicious pun on gay men sucking dick.
Yeah.
And there's always been this backlash as these minoritized people create something culturally powerful to push back against it. But yeah, just to go back to house music, yeah, it was very much explicitly in those contexts of queers and people of color. And it's not solely queer people that were partaking in these house scenes, not solely people of color that were, but primarily it was, and all the originators of the genre, all the big names, all the big names at the time, all the important names, all the people who pushed the boundaries were pretty much queer or black.
But they weren't the ones getting record contracts.
No, absolutely not. Particularly as the genre gained traction, like, what's the biggest house act that comes to mind for most people, like Swedish House Mafia, which isn't really aesthetically or contextually house music, but it's a perfect example, I would say, of something how can be so far removed from its original context by racist, heteronormative capitalist forces, and then recontextualized to just be what I would say is a pretty ugly and boring thing.
So I've never thought that way about disco music, about the time it started to emerge, and I mean, you know, social movements were very visible back then, and so disco is also political. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. In the, you know, the, I'd say the most legendary disco club was Paradise Garage, which again was a largely like queer black audience, and at the time, it was even more precarious to be visible as a member of those identity groups than it was now. So clubs have always functioned at their best as a safe, I don't like the word safe space because it can be a bit inaccurate and kind of glazes over the ugly parts of the history of these cultural institutions, but a safer place for people to express themselves, people to explore their sexuality, people to explore their own identity, people to just hang out, really. And at the time, you know, in the 70s, disco was a very important, you know, disco and the disco scene and disco clubs were a really important place for that.
Well, fantastic. Well, I think we're going to go to a quick break and I'm going to play some ads, and then Arag's got some music lined up for us, which I'm pretty excited about. We're going to come back just after this break, so stay tuned. We're going to be talking about what's actually happening in Melbourne when it comes to particularly what Arag's involved with when it comes to highlighting and lifting up queer artists and artists of colour back into the spaces where those sounds originated from, and how that's been going so far over the last few years with a little organisation he's working with. So if you want to hear about that, you got to stay tuned, guys. This is Triple Bypass and you're on Joy.
We're Tegan and Sarah, and Australia's only LGBTI radio station needs your support. Sign up as a member now. Head to joy.org.au.
That's right. This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Triple Bypass. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Rag.
That's right. We've got Rag joining us in the studio tonight to talk to us and educate both of us about the very queer history of house music. Now, so we were just playing a track that you brought in. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
It's by a Melbourne lady called Simona Castricum. Mm-hmm. She's a trans woman. She's an incredible... She's a lot of things. So she's an architect, an academic, a writer, as well as a musician and a DJ.
Does she perform in at clubs?
She does. She DJs. She DJs as well as does a live kind of one woman band show. Her live show, like, she plays the drums while singing and playing the synthesizer and a lot of things at once. And her work at times explicitly deals with transgender identity, which there's, I think, there's not a lot of music out there dealing with themes like that. Mm. So it's really interesting in terms of both the intention behind the music and the context it's created in. Like, her own narrative is pretty unique, and her myriad of like skills and talents, as well as aesthetically, the music is just fucking great to listen to.
And so is this closer to the kind of people who were creating house music and techno music when it was first emerging?
Yeah, closer. I don't actually know how long Simona's been making music for, but I would say a long time. But yeah, a lot of pioneering artists were queer, were trans, and now artists that are prominent, you see that obviously a lot less.
Yeah. Well, this has been... I think we were talking about during that ad break as well, Anthony was saying that in some of the districts that used to be the queer districts in Melbourne, there are a lot of house and trance clubs. Like, there's kind of people do talk about gay guys love to party and like that kind of dance music and everything like that, particularly with discos we were talking about before the break as well. I don't know if you guys want to get involved in the conversation and talk about your own experiences with house and disco was things that you got involved with before it became a little more mainstream. If you were just that cool, you can message us on 0427569949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. And if you're liking what you're hearing so far but you can't stay tuned, don't worry, you can find the podcast later on joy.org.au/triple bypass or on iTunes.
Yeah, because like in Melbourne in the late 90s, I mean, there were places like the Dome, Freakazoid, I guess the market, I mean, the Commercial Road Strip. And there was a very strong representation of trans people who'd go to those clubs, particularly, I think, Freakazoid and the Dome nightclubs. Lots of house music, lots of trans music. They were known to play those, particularly that kind of music. Does that still happen in Melbourne?
Yeah, a lot of there is a really big, thriving queer party scene. It's a bit more underground.
Other than Poof Doof.
Poof Doof? I think Poof Doof is dead now, actually. Or not dead, but very occasional, once every few months. Like, there's pretty big nights like Le Fag or Closet or Butte, which are very, their branding is very explicitly queer. Mm-hmm. And I think their crowd is extremely queer. Their bookings are extremely queer.
Well, that's something that you've been doing as well, because I guess my experience in my very brief year or so when I was looking at the party scene, I went to a bar called Barry's IQ Night on Thursdays, and that was a lot of 90s. And then I would occasionally go to the Peel with my friends and often be turned back at the door because I was a lady. So I suppose I'm wondering, when you mention a queer scene, are we talking, does that mean it's a gay male scene, or is this actually like a...
No, I would say,
scene.
You know, sometimes still the, like, pink washing and, like, gay male dominance does bleed over into these underground scenes. But from my understanding, they are better, quote unquote, in that regard than, the Peel on a Saturday night. Like, I think with every underground subculture, like, the politics are a bit better. They're not necessarily all the way there. There's still room for improvement, critique. But they, you know, they would brand themselves queer clubs. You get a lot of women, you get a lot of gender nonconforming people at some of these events. You get a lot more people of color than you would, I think, in on Commercial Road or on or at like the Peel or Bowery or these kind of more mainstream style institutions.
Yeah. So and you, so you do a bit of work with a group called the Cool Room. So that is, from what I've heard, quite a political party organization, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would say almost explicitly political. So,
sounds like a great party to me.
It's a good party. The thing is, when everybody feels safe and comfortable, and the people who are women are feeling safe, then everybody has a better time. Like, I don't think anybody wants to go to a party where it's all men. And I don't think anybody wants to go to a party where people don't feel safe.
So can you talk about that when you said particularly women feeling safe? What are you referring to there?
So a lot of women, pretty much every time they go out, or very frequently will get sexually harassed, will get sexually assaulted, will get groped, will get hit on in ways. Ruby, maybe you can speak more to this.
No, I thought you're doing a great job. No, it's definitely true. When you have a dark space with a whole lot of bodies squished together, particularly if the atmosphere in that space is not a safe one, you do get a lot of wandering hands, and particularly because there's the sense of anonymity where they haven't got to deal with actually with the repercussions of their actions. Mm. Also, people, a lot of the time, if there's been a lot of alcohol and a lot of time the guys, you know, in a lot of clubs I used to go to, they'd try and get more girls in there because there's just a lot of guys inside because the guys are there to look for women. So it ended up kind of feeling like a hunting season.
Gross.
It is. It's a deeply, like, you know, it becomes, you know, you're dancing on the defense almost. So you kind of learn to swing your elbows out and get the heels back and everything. And it's not a safe place at all in that you can't actually let your guard down. You know, if you're drinking or your friends are drinking, you're watching them. You're watching everywhere around you.
Right.
You're kind of constantly on edge. So you don't... I suppose even though I found that still happened less predatory, but still that kind of unwanted touching would happen when I'd go to spaces that were predominantly gay male. Yeah. Because even though it's not sexual harassment, because it's not sexual, it's still harassment to have someone you don't know grab your tits.
Totally. And thank you for sharing that, because I think that's an experience that a lot of cisgender males, particularly whether gay or straight, would not know about when they go out dancing or clubbing and that sort of thing. And it is a shame. I mean, gay male misogyny happens in queer spaces and women, they feel entitled to women's bodies because they're, quote, gay.
Well, yeah, and it is interesting because, you know, you wouldn't call it a sexual assault because it's not sexual in nature. However, it is still, it for the woman, it still would count as that, because having a man you don't know grab you will instantly trigger a particular response for you.
Right.
So even if it is not meant in a, like, I'm not trying to attack you, I'm not going to try and take you off to a corner, I'm not trying to do some kind of Neanderthalic seduction dance. It's, you know, I don't honestly know what they're trying to get at half the time. It's like, do you think women like this? But, you know, it's still that kind of, that threatening aspect. But from what actually, we might have to go to a break quite quickly, but when we get back, I do want to talk a bit with Raag about what the Cool Room's been doing about that, because from what I've heard, you guys have actually been pioneering a lot of being very black and white with anti-harassment policies in your spaces, which has apparently had a pretty good ripple effect from what I've heard.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Nice one.
So we're gonna jump into that. We're gonna have another bang and tune brought to us by Raag after these quick messages. So stay tuned, guys. This is Triple Bypass, and you're listening on Joy 94.9.
Hey, we're the Veronicas, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Walk for me, 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 walk for me,
serve,
walk for me,
serve,
walk for me,
serve,
walk for me,
serve,
walk for me,
walk for me,
walk for me,
walk for me.
I'll see you after the function.
Hello, good thanks. This is Effie, and you're listening to Melbourne's most uplifting music mix on Joy 94.9. How ace is this?
This is Joy 94.9. Every time I hear that, I giggle. This is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Triple Bypass. We're here to put the B in LGBTIA. And that was... I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Raag.
Raag is joining us tonight to give us a pretty banging education on house disco and its queer origins. So what were we just listening to?
Listening to Trunco Track's Walk For Me, which was a ballroom anthem which came out in the mid to late 80s. My memory doesn't fail me.
Now, you have to explain. So ballroom meaning, so that wasn't like, you know, that wasn't a waltzing track. That wasn't a hoop skirts track.
Definitely no waltzing. More voguing than waltzing.
Right.
So ballroom, I'm not a ballroom scholar, but if you have seen Paris and Burning, that's the kind of core reference point, or a core current cultural reference point for what ballroom culture was. Ballroom culture, again, was a space for kind of queer, black organizing. I think a lot of ball culture was situated in New York, but someone can text in and correct me on that if they like.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of, it was about performance. So it was, a lot of it was about performance. A lot of it was about dressing up, and there, you know, there was different competitions for like, who was the most passing drag queen? Who was the most, who had the best moves? Who had the most incredible outfits?
Right.
There was a range of categories often created so that people of different body types and other criteria were able to, like, you know, compete fairly.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was just, again, like a safe space for exploration and for expression.
And that's pretty cool. I mean, because that sort of be, I mean, there's nothing subtle about it. It's in your face, isn't it? Is that the sort of, that's the thing.
I loved it. I thought it was a really catchy song. Also, when Rag was filling us in on the origins of it, I did instantly think of RuPaul and RuPaul's Drag Race and the kind of the environment he's tried to create there, which sounds like, you know, with the same kind of contest and the outfits and everything, sounds kind of like a bit of an ode to that. To that era and to what was happening around there, only again a bit more commercialized, but again that kind of taking something that had been happening, that I imagine, given I'm not sure exactly how old he is, he looks kind of timeless, but I know he's been around for a little while, but you know, that he may have been going through himself. By the way, if you do want to text in and correct Rag or just tell him how well he's doing, you can message us on 0427 569 949, or email us at onair@joy.org.au.
We're busting out the tracks tonight. Well, we have a couple of messages. We have Zach texting from inside the house. So thank you, Zach, for that message. I want to send a quick shout out to my gorgeous friend, Andy, who's here from Hobart, and she is listening to us and loving the show. So thank you, Andy. We've also got a message from Nathan. So thanks for texting in, Nathan. He says, OMG, I love House and Trance. Great show tonight.
Glad you're liking it. I'm digging it too. I have to admit, House and Trance music is stuff I've listened to when I've been out. It's not something I've gone and done a whole lot of research on and looked into the origins of. Mostly, I'll be honest, because it didn't really feel like it was music for me. It was music that got played in clubs that I didn't go to a whole lot.
Trance music doesn't really have any direct association with kind of house or techno. Well, it is associated with, but they don't really fall into the same category. And the kind of organizing around trance music is not really similar to house or techno.
Good to know. Good to know. I stand very corrected.
Right.
We just got a message in from Naomi. What an interesting show. That last tune was great. Very impressed by Rag's knowledge in an area that isn't often discussed. Cheers.
No, it's not discussed. It's not often just danced to. You know, that's my experience with this kind of music.
And like, you know, we look into the history of a lot of kinds of music. Like, there is a lot of information on the history of classical music, even on, like, there are so many documentaries that have been made about the history of big bands and the Beatles and Nirvana and these kind of big names that we kind of associate with music. But given that house and disco are a huge part of social life, you know, when people go out, it is interesting that there hasn't been that kind of same reflection. And maybe it is because the origins of it are the part they're not wanting to look
at.
That's just a hypothesis.
Absolutely. You know, like, you've got classical music, Nirvana, and what was the other example you said?
The Beatles.
Like, it's pretty straight white music. You know, it's incredible music, but, like, you know, people can, mainstream society can explore it without being challenged as much.
Absolutely. And I suppose, what do you think it is about this kind of music? So particularly with house music, how did this kind of music come about? So with disco, is it because, so my thought is that a lot of the time the beats are kind of like replicate a heartbeat. So there's that kind of, and that kind of connection can, again, make you feel very connected with people around you. So that kind of almost tribal, like a war drum feeling, which would make sense if you're getting people who do not often feel connected to be in a room together and to actually kind of feel like they're all feeling things at the same time moving as one. I don't know. I'm just like, I guess I'm curious to know how this style came about.
I think that's like a pretty common belief, and one I subscribe to an extent. Like, the, you know, the beat on like every, you know, bop, 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 bop underpinning like most house and techno music yeah, is like a heartbeat. It's something which is easy to latch onto. It's something which is relatively easy to dance to. And I think, you know, dancing for a long time in that kind of mindful, engaged way can really, it can put you into kind of interesting states of consciousness. And I know a lot of people who on dance floor is just dancing, even at sometimes inebriated, sometimes sober, have had pretty, you know, like releases of trauma, big feelings right. of relief, feelings that they've kind of processed things they've been carrying around for a long time. And I think having that like beat, that like 4-4 beat to anchor things to can help with that a lot.
And how active is the DJ in that process as opposed to just the music and something that people who are dancing connecting to? Because the DJ is doing some things too. There's a pace that sort of changes.
Absolutely. I think DJing is something which, as you know, as a friend of mine and a local amazing trans musician, Brooke Power, said, DJing can be as hard or as easy as you want to make it. And DJing can be really, really, really hard if you want to do it well. And part of that is the technical aspect, but I'd say the more significant part is understanding how to take people on a journey, how to take people on a narrative that explores a range of emotional trajectories, a range of intensities, and can over time gradually build up people to a point where they have a really significant experience.
Oh, you're bringing back memories. God.
And so we have touched just briefly on what you've been doing with a group called The Cool Room. So we can focus it more on that now. So firstly, so what is the purpose of this political party group?
So Cool Room, in one sentence, I'd say, is to be a safer place to dance to house and techno. So the three people who started it, three boys, I should say, Sebastian, Jacob, and Andrew, they were just sick of going out, seeing their friends get harassed, they didn't really experience as much of the harassment, but even at times, you know, they would get called, like, a fag, or sorry, I'm not sure if I can use slurs online, but other slurs like that. And they were just sick of it and wanted to do something better. So gradually over time, the team grew and the night grew and grew. And I'd say our politics now center around a couple different things. So a key one is representation of people which might have been overlooked. So, you know, you look at most club lineups in Melbourne, Australia, or the world, really, and it's almost entirely men. It's largely straight people. It's largely white people. It's largely cisgender people. And there's all this incredible music being made by people who don't belong to those identity groups. There's music that's created from different experiences, music that is created with different intentions, that's created in different aesthetic contexts and is following different aesthetic trends. And it just needs to be showcased. So we try and just make sure we're being diverse with our bookings, not only sonically, but also in terms of the people we're booking. So we try and book a lot of queer artists, a lot of black artists, a lot of women, because they're out there and they're bloody great. So someone needs to be doing it. That's one aspect of the kind of club's politics. The other is a lot of advocacy and policy around anti-harassment. So as we touched on before, the club's not really a safe place at all for a lot of people, women, queer people, some gender non-conforming people, some people of color. And so we've developed a service called The Cool Line, where it's a number where we have a bunch of posters with up on the venue. We communicate it through our social media. It's a phone number where you text it. It goes to an app on all of our phones. So if you say, someone texts me, hey, this dude is being creepy at the bar, we have a safety team, Kate, Ellie, and Emily, who can respond to it immediately. They get the message immediately. They can go and find the person. They can talk to the perpetrator, eject them if need be. So again, like it creates this direct and immediate accountability when it's working well.
So do this group of people, are they part of security, or like what's their role?
No, they're not security. That's a good point to bring up though. So initially what we found working with a couple venues, that security can be difficult because security is primarily there to protect not the punters, but the venue. The security is hired by the venue, not by the person, not by the group of people putting on the party. So ultimately, you don't really, as a promoter, you don't really have that much control over security's policy, who they hire, or what they do. So there was a couple times when, at different venues, when security didn't respond how we wanted to an incident. So we said, all right, how can we, you know, deal with this? We can't be purporting to be a safer partying space if we can't actually have control over the actions that are taken towards offending people. So we created a direct channel for people to contact us directly, and then we can act on it.
That sounds fantastic. Love it. Sounds fantastic. Love it. And I think even having those posters around with a line there would be a reminder for people who might you know, feel they could be a bit loose, that they will be held accountable.
Absolutely. And that's a big idea with it, to create a new culture where these kind of things, like, you know, harassing people is not okay, and to shift the wider club culture in Melbourne as well to thinking about these issues more, because there's a lot of women who want to go out and a lot of women and other groups of people who just won't go to certain nights because they know they're going to have a shit time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I think we can talk more about the effect that the cool rooms policies and have been having across the border, around the broader community, and what's been happening. There's been a lot of talk about what's been happening at festivals over the last year or so. We do have to go another break, guys. So stay tuned if you want to hear more. We're going to be finishing up soon. We have another song by Raag coming up. This is Triple Bypass, and you're on Joy.
Hi, this is Rob Nils, and you're listening to Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is Joy 94.9. You're listening to Triple Bypass, the bisexuality show here on Joy. I'm Ruby.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Raag.
And we've had Raag in the studio tonight talking to us about the very queer history of house music and what has been happening, particularly in Melbourne, with a group called Cool Room, about promoting queer female and artists of colour when it comes to bringing that kind of essence back and also making clubs a safer space for everyone, particularly for women, to be able to enjoy. Now, what was that track? Because that was spectacular.
That was by a South African duo called Faka, F-A-K-A, on a label called Non Worldwide. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name because I think it's in Zulu, and my Zulu is very poor. I think that's also, it's really important to include these like non-white queer artists in the conversation, because a lot of how the conversation, at least in Australia and white Australia, centers around queerness, it's in these terms which we kind of, I think unless we challenge them, it's easy to assume they're universal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, you know, even a term like queer or transsexual or transgender, they can be viewed as completely, they're culturally specific terms.
Yeah.
So the way gender is performed in a lot of different cultures, like India, for example, or like Native American culture, and in Indian culture, you have hijra, who are not really men, not really women. You know, they occupy like a similar space to transgender people or gender non-conforming people. There's two-spirit people in Native American culture.
In Japan, a number of their spirits would swap genders pretty frequently.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. See, I think it's just important to also include these artists exploring gender in non-white Western frameworks.
Absolutely.
In this kind of cultural conversations around music and queerness and gender non-conforming and gender diverse identity.
Well, I think that's a mild tangent that I'm going to follow down. It's interesting to think about the idea of, so terms like gender fluid and agender are modern terms, but they're not modern concepts, I would argue. Mm. And one of the things I've thought of recently is someone was like, well, why do you think that they have become the terms? Why does a lot of Western society, as we know it, have very strict gender roles? I would go to Adam and Eve. This idea of God creating a man and a woman and that kind of being the two molds that must be fit into, and then making one woman and her being like, I don't like this, and him being like, all right, I'm just going to try that again. Just go away, Lilith. Get out of here. And then Eve's like, you know what would be nice? Thinking about things. Oh, God, I did it again. Just go away.
Right.
But anyway, enough of that. But yeah, no, it's a really good point. And so Are they both performers? Like, do they make their music? Do they DJ as well? Do they perform together?
They do make their music. They perform together. I'm not sure, like, what, you know, gender identifiers they use to describe themselves, but I think they do use the word queer.
Mm-hmm.
And they DJ together as well. And the style of music, it's kind of formal, you know, it's not explicitly classifiable in terms of genre,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty closely related to a genre known as Gwom.
Mm-hmm.
There's meant to be a click in there, but I do not have the faculties to do that. It's spelled G-Q-O-M. So mm-hmm. definitely worth a look up. Really interesting emerging music coming out of a lot of, yeah, a lot of marginalized communities in South Africa.
Right.
And before that, we were also talking about what the group that you've worked with, Cool Room, has been doing. Now, we've got only a few minutes left on the show, but we should definitely retouch on that. So Cool Room is a kind of political organization or group that is organizing events that around the two theories, firstly of inclusivity and particularly promoting and including queer, female and people of color as other artists, and also on zero harassment policy. So you mentioned before that there's a number you can text at these places and that will get someone to come and try and help you out of your situation. You know, if someone is making you uncomfortable, you can message this number and they'll come and take care of it. Now, we were talking about before that, so Cool Room is one of the first groups that have been doing this. So it's been happening for a few years now.
That's correct, about 2.5 years now.
Yeah. So what effect has that had on the club scene and the kind of the party scenes around Melbourne?
You know, it's hard to say what influence has been the changes we've tried to put in place, what changes have been people. You know, I think the broader cultural discourse around feminism and all these kind of social justice related issues has shifted more to the left, and what I would say in a very good way. But whatever is attributable to us, what is not, is kind of irrelevant. I think in Melbourne, the you see a lot more women booked than 2 years ago. You see a lot more. In the kind of underground house and techno scene, I'd say it's pretty rare, or at least somewhat rare now, to see an all... No, that's not true. It's less common to see an all-male lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of women who have come up in the past 2 years who are absolutely incredible DJs. I think that, you know, these kind of people who've been playing in their bedrooms for a long time and collecting records for a long time have great taste, but only as this cultural shift has happened have they actually felt there's, you know, space for them to do it. And those are the people that makes me happiest to see doing it, because they're fucking great.
So when's the next event?
Next event is Saturday, June 24.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2 weeks from this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're featuring an artist called K-Hand. Known as, her real name is Kelly Han. And Kelly, she's a pioneer from Detroit. Came up in, I think her first record was out in 1989 or maybe 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she's someone who, like a lot of other minoritized people, I feel has really been overlooked in the history. She's someone who deserves to be. Detroit was the real home of techno music. And Kelly was producing records. She's probably the first woman out of Detroit. First woman to release on the biggest UK label of the time, Warp Records, and she just makes incredible tracks, an incredible DJ, and has been doing it for almost 30 years. So wow. It's really special for us to be able to book
That's
a pioneer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so what effect do you think it has for people going to these places, going to Cool Room and seeing a lineup of DJs and musicians that is not what they're used to? What kind of effect have you had, comments, people telling you that, you know, you mentioned before women who've been, you know, had collecting records but never really thought this is something I could make a living out of. Have you noticed, have you been getting feedback about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had friends tell me that, you know, until they've seen like people who look like them or belong to the same identity groups as them on stage, they never felt like they could do it. As a brown person, you know, as an Indian person, it's something I've experienced myself. You know, whenever I see someone of the same kind of racial origin as me doing something I'd like to do that I felt like I can't do, I'm like, hey, maybe I can do that. And I think it's something which is really hard to understand unless you've experienced it. Like, it's not something I realized until I saw other like brown people making electronic music. And I was like, oh, maybe I can. So I think representation is totally one of the biggest things in combating entrenched kind of sexism, racism, yeah, at all.
We know a little bit about that, don't we, Anthony?
I think that's true across many social groups. We do have an email. Jade, a regular listener of ours, has sent us a message, and she sends in a quote: "Not everyone understands house music. It's a spiritual thing, a body thing, a soul thing." Sums it up.
It's an interesting quote. I don't entirely agree with that, just because I think like this link to spirituality and like is kind of implies a universality, which can erase a bit the original context, uh-huh, of it. You know, a lot of people say that about house music, and there's like a kind of small group, including one of my favorite artists, DJ Sprinkles, Terry Tamlett, who we booked a few months ago, who pushes against that. So I think that can be a really like beautiful idea, but you just need to be mindful to not forget that house music wasn't created by everybody and wasn't originally for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose, can you, is it possible to enjoy house music today that has moved on from that? Or should there be like, you know, that is maybe considered to be a bit more for a wider audience? So how can you, what is a respectful way to enjoy that and embrace that while still understanding that this came from a place where it was not necessarily for everybody? It was actually people who did need to have that kind of link with each other to feel safe and to have a sense of community.
No, that's a really good question. And I'm definitely not of the philosophy that, you know, you have to be a certain identity to appreciate a certain kind of music or to even to be able to play it or listen to it. I just think you should be mindful of the roots where it comes from. Yep. And if a conversation comes up like that happens, and also buy music from queer and black artists.
Absolutely.
Don't download this shit. You buy it.
You've heard it here, guys. Yeah. Buy it. We're going to definitely put up the names for those future tracks, because I think a few people of our listeners would definitely want to go follow a few rabbit holes and find what you might find suggested to you on YouTube or on Spotify if you listen to
totally.
A few of those.
Hey, thanks so much for coming in and chatting to us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been very educational.
We've been schooled. Educated.
We have been. I've loved it. It's been great, because it's just one of those things that, you know, seems to be so linked with queer culture, going out and dancing and stuff. And I guess, like, you know, hearing that a lot of the things that I'd kind of written off about it because it seemed to me to be fitting into straight culture.
Right.
Actually, no, it was straight culture took it from queer people.
Mainstream corporate.
And mainstreamed culture. It. And so we should be definitely trying to... No, well, obviously, we've all got different parts of it to reclaim. As a white person, I can't reclaim things that were never mine. But I can definitely dance to them and appreciate them and buy their stuff.
Totally.
Put your money where your mouth is. So I try to do anyway. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We are going to have to wind up there. Please stay tuned. Andy's up next with the very last intense burst of ABBA. Of course, that will not be the last intense burst of ABBA on Joy, because we are a queer radio station and there's a lot of ABBA around.
Yeah, there is.
It's half of our discography. The other half is Kylie Minogue. But thank you guys so much for listening. If you found the show interesting, or if you've just tuned in now and are like, wow, that's a bit different, I'd like to hear more about that, you can find the podcast at joy.org.au/triple bypass, or you can find it on iTunes. We're posting up about it on our Facebook page at Joy, Triple Bypass on Joy, or on Twitter at Triple Bypass.
We will. And so come back next week, folks, and listen to us again. James will be back with us next week.
That's right. We'll be here at 9 live on Tuesday. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been Triple Bypass, and this is Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.